Call this meeting of the Ethics Commission to order, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Miller, do you have an ethics thought for us this evening?
I do. This is from Mark Twain, and the quote is, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so." Mm-hmm. Mark Twain.
We have two sets of minutes on the agenda for approval, the first of which is October 25th, 2017. Anyone have any questions or concerns regarding those minutes? If not, do I have a motion? Yes.
I move to approve the October 25th, 2017 minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Passes. So moving to minutes of January 16th, 2018. Any questions or comments or discussion on those minutes?
I'd suggest there's a note at the end of the public comment. I remember this comment being made by Mr. Nooney, and I agree with the note. I just don't think it belongs in the minutes. So I would, Mr. Nooney had made a comment that there was a, he alleged that there was an issue with the notification for the minutes of that meeting. And the note is probably correct, but it wasn't something that happened during the meeting, so I'd take that out. So I move to approve the minutes with the removal of that parenthetical note at the end.
Any comments on the proposed redaction from anyone else?
I just need clarification. So you want to take out public comment, which is a part of
it? Just the parenthetical note.
Sherry, can you speak into the microphone, please, so it can record you? Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're just taking out the parenthetical note.
Correct.
That portion out of it. Okay.
Yeah, my motion is to approve the minutes with the removal of that parenthetical at the end of the public comment section.
Any other discussion?
Perhaps we could add it to the minutes of this meeting.
So it's recorded that
the chair sets that for new business. I don't, Mr. Nooney, I'm sure, would have something to say about that. And so I anticipate he would want to be here if we were going to discuss whether he did or didn't receive notice. I just don't think it matters. I think the minutes accurately reflect the comment that was made, and the response to that comment is irrelevant.
Further comment?
No.
Subject to the proposed redaction, do we have a motion on the floor?
We have a motion.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion pass as modified. We have a report from the Echo office, Ms. Miller.
Were you going to approve the March 29th minutes?
Oh, I apologize. There is a third one on there. Thank you. We do have a third minutes. It's March 29th, 2018. That's the Strategic Planning Ethics Commission meeting. Do we have any comments or questions regarding those minutes?
The end of the second page says 2017. Should be 2018. Just typographical. Thought I had.
So it does. Any other questions or comments regarding the March 29th, 2018 minutes?
No.
None. Do we have a motion?
Move to approve the minutes as amended.
Second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Now I will renew my premature request for any report from the Echo office.
Yes, we have just a brief report that we've been very busy this summer training and using our new training director. And she's done some really great work taking our materials and making them look really professional and doing PowerPoints. We've trained at the Transportation Authority, the Port Authority, and we're having a big training with all the boards of the independent authorities end of September, beginning of October, sometime in October probably. We've also gotten all of the departmental ethics officers together for a big meeting in June, and they all came. We filled the mayor's conference room, and they're all on board. So that was a successful meeting. Also with the Kids Hope Alliance, training the new director. Kirby continues to train with new employees about once a month. We have a big crowd of about 50 new employees, and we group them in on all the ethics laws. And every other month, we've been doing the board and commission training. So it's pumped up, and our trainings this year compared to last year is up about 30-40%. Training. And we also have some presentations that we've made for the State Department on our practices. One group came in of young teenage leaders from Iraq. I sent out notices that. That went really well, a good group. And tomorrow, if anybody's interested, you're invited to come to a presentation we're doing in this room for some leaders from Kazakhstan. So we'll be talking about transparency with them. And another part of what we focus on in the summer, financial disclosure, and we have 100% compliance from all of our officials on financial disclosure. And that's my report.
Great. Office of General Counsel?
No report. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we also have some committee reports on the agenda this evening. Complaints Committee, First Committee, do we have a Complaints Committee report?
I'm happy to answer any questions, but I don't have a report.
Any questions for Mr. Rogan? Legislative Committee, any report?
Really, just to reflect the information that's in the strategic minutes. We've had one or two meetings, I can't remember, since this, trying to get to some changes in parts 4 and 8. It's been moving very slowly. We haven't anything to recommend at this time. Just slogging through the process. It's taken much, much longer than I thought it would, and with the summer break, we really haven't had a chance to your full consideration.
Okay, thank you. We have an open government or outreach committee report.
Ioana Allen is out of town for a family matter, so she would have reported on something that's on the agenda, which is the Transparency Committee. So we'll be giving some information on that on her behalf.
Thank you. And finally, the Internal Operations Committee.
Do we have nothing to report there. Since we haven't met since the strategic planning meeting in March.
All right, which brings us to new business. We have Inspector General Lisa Green with us in the audience, and we would certainly call her first to give her presentation.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
If you're familiar, I'm Lisa Green. I'm with the Inspector General's office and currently serving in the capacity of the Inspector General. Happy to be doing that.
Congratulations.
Would you mind just waiting until you're back at the mic and then?
Any issues, you need to contact me, feel free to reach me at the office anytime. I'll always be
Just a quick clarification. In the first finding on two of the 50 instances for the meetings being posted, that is a requirement of our local code, Chapter 15. It's where we go further than state law in requiring something. And that's for the first finding. The second finding, it appears that that has to do with the council rules, not Chapter 15 or any Florida law. It's just like, look, City Council, you enacted a rule. You didn't follow your own rule. So I just wanted to point out where the authority is coming for those particular findings. Is that correct, yeah?
And does that conclude your presentation of your report? Excellent. Well, thank you so much for providing this to us and for taking the time to give us this update. And we very much appreciate it.
And good luck with the – oh, I have one question. Just if you could tell everyone the status of the accreditation for the office.
Through the chair, the status is probably going to be delayed because we are – because of the process that we've had three turnovers, we're having to go through reorganization and continue – we have setbacks and policy reviews, which we're working on that. It's still in progress. And we're hoping that, you know, possibly we can speed up once I get the investigator. But it's ongoing.
Good. That'll be exciting when it's done.
So maybe the timing could work out when we get accredited in February when that's over here in the Wardoff Village. So we'll see how that works. Not February of next year, but when we do it at the February conference.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Sure. Could I ask a question or two about this?
Sure. Absolutely.
Serena, is your intent here to outline issues with best practices, or is this just about mere compliance versus noncompliance with the law? This is not about general transparency best practices. This is just about whether the council is violating Section 15107 or the Sunshine Law.
It's about the best practice because there's no way, if they're not complying, there's no way I would know that they're being transparent, because if you're not, if you're having member-to-member meetings outside the scope of the meetings, there's no way for us to know that. Okay. And that cannot be quantified.
Have you gotten a response from council on your recommendation? A letter from Council President Bowman?
Yes. And so I think the immediate training was a sign of what they were looking to do. And the second thing was reviewing the requirements of council. So we'll be monitoring that and seeing what they do to see if that helps improve.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next new order of business is the selection process for chair and vice chair for the year of 2019. Miller, if you could remind us the current process that's in place, which perhaps we would be willing to approve without any amendment.
Well, it is a pretty simple process, which is obviously anybody that's cycling off is not eligible. Typically, it's the vice chair that moves up, but our vice chair got married and is interested in doing other things.
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. Anyhow, so typically we send out an email probably right after this meeting just saying, for those of you who have terms in 2019, is anyone interested in chair or vice chair? And typically over the years, one or two people emerge that want those positions. It becomes pretty obvious. In the 20 years of our history, we've never had a fight where people are campaigning and putting up signs. And, you know, it seems like a natural progression because you have enough years on the commission that almost everybody can serve as chair and vice chair in time if they're interested in that. So it just sort of evolves naturally. So I'll send out an email saying who's interested. Typically, I get one or two people. It becomes pretty obvious. And at our next meeting, I would announce that, and we can get a motion approving that. If no one steps forward, or, you know, we need to come up with something else, then the chair would appoint a nominating committee at the October meeting, and they would pursue it. But it's never involved like that. It just sort of naturally happens. So I'll send out, the process is pretty simple. I'll send out an email within the next week requesting, and then I'll announce that at the next meeting, and we can proceed with the motion.
And just as a point of clarification, the internal operating procedures, section 4.5 on election of officers, states that the commission shall elect a chair and vice chair at its November or December meeting. So if you elect it in the October meeting, you will need to do a waiver of that provision.
I think we did that last year.
We did.
Yeah.
Really noted. Does anyone have any questions or concerns with this selection process as outlined by Ms. Miller? Willing to follow that?
Okay.
All right. And we also have, as an agenda item, the process and schedule for forthcoming vacancies on the commission. Ms. Miller, did you have some input on that as well?
I do not, but Kirby does.
Ah, thank you.
So we unfortunately have four members whose terms are either going to be, well, are expiring at the end of the year and either are unable or undesirous of serving again. So it is Mr. All, who is the state attorney representative, Ms. Barnett, who is the mayor's representative, Mr. Hartley, who is the sheriff's representative, and then Mr. Ryback, who is the Ethics Commission representative. So Carla has reached out and will continue to reach out to the sheriff and to the mayor and to the state attorney requesting their appointments for new members for the upcoming year, hopefully by the end of this year. And then there will have to be a nominating committee established for the commission to do interviews so the commission can advertise the vacancy for Mr. Ryback's seat and the application process, and then the nominating committee will convene to interview potential applicants and to make a recommendation to the commission. And Lourdes has very wonderfully in your packet here created a suggested timeline for the vacancy so that you can follow the different steps of the process.
Okay. And,
so we would just like you all, your input on that, and then to make a nominating committee.
Excellent document here to lead us to draw. We'll note that today's date is where we're suggested to appoint our nominating committee, and I think that's a good idea, unless there's any opposition to that. And hearing none, I would ask those present if there's any interest by anyone to be on the nominating committee, first of all, so that we don't just randomly appoint. Any interest?
I would be happy to serve on the nominating committee.
One of three, I'm guessing. Any others?
I'd be happy. Yeah.
Three.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you. I forgot to raise one point of procedure for you. Rule 7 of the internal operating procedures currently provides that the internal operations committee has done this, but that's not been the procedure that we have followed. So I would recommend a waiver of that particular part of the procedure because you did a nominating committee as opposed to the internal ops committee. And also it says that the nominee is brought back to the commission in November for a vote, and they potentially, according to this outline, could be presented in October for a vote.
Wouldn't need to waive that provision yet, the October November provision.
Right.
However, we would need to waive precedent. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Just one point I wanted to bring up with the committee. we have. Well, first of all, the people that are cycling off. John Hartley, who just got married and is renovating a house down in Volusia County. And I'd like to mention that Mr. Ryback is cycling off, but he's doing missionary work down in Central America that is outstanding. I mean, and so sometimes if we can have people for 3 years, it's great. And then sometimes other things in their life, you know, like take over. And so I'm always happy to see people, you know, move on to things so honorable as what you're doing. And so trying to find replacements for those people is always a challenge. But one of the focus points that I'd like to emphasize is that we need minority representation on the commission. And so we're doing everything we can to reach out to different community organizations, getting resumes in, and not just for the position that the Ethics Commission appoints, but to go to all the elected officials and say, you know what, you have the same people all the time that you're appointing. We'd like you to take a look at some minority applicants and some up-and-coming people in the community. So if we can create a resume bank of people that are interested like that, you know, perhaps, you know, we can get a more diverse representation on the commission. So we're working very hard to focus on that. And Lourdes has been implementing some of our programs on that. So hopefully we'll get a big fat pile of resumes and we'll keep them on file. And then I will take them to all of the elected officials who have appointments and try to lobby for them to appoint more minorities on the commission. We don't have any control over what they do, but, you know, I'll lobby my best, the best I can on it.
Chair, may I ask a question on that?
Yes.
Ms. Miller, what is the, have you spoken to any of the three elected officials whose positions will be open about the opening?
Not yet. I know that the state attorney knows about it, and John Hartley was going to speak directly to the sheriff about it. Yeah, that's, you know, typically October is when we start moving in on all the elected officials. I want to have some resumes to give them when I talk to them.
I remember when I first joined the commission, we were pretty short-staffed, and that really kind of stops what the commission can do, especially when processing complaints. Mm-hmm. And so I'd suggest that you or Mr. Hall maybe reach out to those people now and ask them to get those in so that those people can go through the city council process, have the right vetting, and then be able to sit confirmed in January.
Clarify as to the state attorney who appointed me. I can confirm that the state attorney is aware of this obligation of appointment, and I'm happy to serve until a replacement
mm-hmm.
is announced. So as to that, we can avoid that issue, at least from that one appointment.
My other suggestion, Mr. Chair, to you is perhaps we should, for our next meeting agenda, add both the Ethics Commission nominee and the officer election so that we notice that. And so if we choose to waive those two operating committee or operating procedure provisions, it's at least been noticed. The public has an opportunity to be here and weigh in if they want to.
That's a good suggestion. Any opposition to that proposal? I think we should add that to the agenda. I know Ms. Allen, unfortunately, can't be here today, Carla, but she has her task force on open government and a proposed ordinance that she was planning on discussing. You had previously referenced. You might make a few comments on that.
Right, and Kirby and I have split it up. She's going to just hit a few of the highlights on the task force that met for several months earlier this year, that Ioana was the Ethics Commission representative on that task force. And so she's going to be Ioana and talk about what that task force was like.
Okay. So I've done my very best to try to summarize for you their final report. But I thought a little bit of context would be necessary to help you understand what the task force, why it was created, when it was created, and what the purpose of it was. So the task force on open government was established by City Council on March 27, 2018, upon the request of then-Council President Brochet to undertake an in-depth review of the legislative process and the methods the public uses to access government. So it was a really broad charge. The task force was required to make recommendations for how the city can be more open and accessible, and also methods to institutionalize transparency. During its tenure, the task force held 10 meetings in a three-month period and heard presentations from 23 people, both from within city and without this outside of city employment, from diverse backgrounds on various topics, including the legislative process, citizen and media access to government, including access to personnel and information, Sunshine Law and public records, best practices in local government transparency, the gift laws, and the city's website. It also conducted an access to government survey that yielded 258 responses about how citizens access local government. On June 29, 2018, the Task Force on Open Government issued its final report. And the purpose of the report was to provide guidance for decisions to improve access by citizens to information and to improve interaction between citizens and government. In its final report, the task force encouraged the city to aspire to greater openness and transparency, including regularly reviewing citizen engagement and transparency in government. The final report included 14 specific findings relating to the difficulty by citizens in several areas, including understanding the legislative process, participating in committee and council meetings, understanding the city's budget process and priorities, navigating the city's website, and accessing public records, including emails and text messages of elected officials, and the cost of producing public records. The final report also included numerous recommendations, some of which Councilmember Brochet has included in transparency legislation she recently filed, and Carla will discuss that in greater detail. But here is a summary of all the recommendations that they made. They wanted to reinstitute the use of video and pamphlets by city council to educate citizens on how legislation is made and when citizens may provide comment. That was done in the past, and several former city council members on the task force recommended that that be reinstituted. They recommended posting notices of public meetings in the searchable form on the city's website, establishing a system to notify citizens of when a bill of interest to that particular citizen would be considered, permitting access by journalists to department heads, amending the council rules to permit public comment on agenda items at council committee and subcommittee meetings, releasing requested public records once they are deemed public and not requiring an additional review, making information regarding the cost of producing public records readily available, producing public records in the most efficient and cost-effective manner, including using technological tools that could ease the burden and cost of redaction of exempt information and expedite response to public records requests, posting city council member emails on the city website, and Carla will get to that as part of that legislation, storing text messages of city officials and employees and making them easily available to the public, ensuring policies and practices for the retention of public records follow state guidelines, and implementing a strategic plan to streamline archiving public records across all city departments, requiring public officials to disclose details of private business travel financed by private citizens. That's part of the legislation Carla's going to talk about. Regarding recording and posting on the city's website any gifts received as part of the city contracts, reinstituting the publication of a public version of the city's annual budget that's easy to understand. Apparently that was done in prior administrations. Reformatting the city's website to make it easier to search and locate information, and to create a data portal, making it easy for citizens to access data. Reinvigorating CPACs to achieve their purpose of maintaining open and effective communication between the community, community organizations, citizens, and city government. Increasing engagement between the mayor, department heads, and citizens through the reestablishment of regular town hall meetings and attendance by the mayor and department heads at CPAC meetings. Posting of CPAC meeting agendas at least one day in advance of them, and simplifying the selection criteria for CPACs. And finally, increasing the number of town hall meetings by city council members to encourage civic engagement. So there were 19 separate recommendations that they made.
And now I'm going to be Ioana. And continue on with those recommendations were discussed over every time that committee met. It was for 2-3 hours, and they went over each one of these in full. Some of them are policy decisions on how the mayor wants to handle things, and we can't dictate policy things to the mayor. Some are things that fall directly in our area that we could work with and come up with some legislation if we delve into it. The bill that has been introduced by Councilmember Brochet has already been sent out to you along with the legislative summary, so you get the gist of it. I mean, it's essentially, if someone's going to get a contract over $1 million, after they get the right now it says before they get the contract, everybody has to disclose the campaign contributions they've made. In discussing the legality of that, it may be changed to once you get awarded a contract over $1 million, then you put down all of your campaign contributions. So you can see what kind of contributions had to be made in order to get that contract, or draw whatever conclusions you want from that information. That's one aspect of this bill. The other one is if you're flying in a private jet, that you disclose the people on the jet and who was paying for that. That's an interesting proposal. And the third one is that all text messages emails of the city council members get posted online for everybody to review. So very ambitious legislation here. I think the Ethics Commission should take a position on it. My suggestion is that we refer it to Ioana's committee, which is the Task Force on Open Government. And since she sat through probably 50 hours of this discussion, she'll be in a really good position to maybe pick out the issues, pick the top issues that really are pertinent to our commission's work, and make some recommendations. Probably not by October. She'll need to chew on it a little bit more, but I think she'd be very interested in taking on this project. I speak for Ioana. She'll take it on.
Any questions or comments?
My only comment was that this is, when I read the Inspector General's report, it seems like the Inspector General is told under our ordinance code, is instructed to do this annual audit. And Ms. Green said today that it's supposed to be to identify best practices. And the two problems she raises are both these hyper-technical violations, right? But then you've got a volunteer commission that comes in and gives 19 different recommendations of things that we can improve. And that just leads me to this question. The word troubling is just slightly too strong for the thought I have, but it just leads me to this question of, like, what are we doing in this audit? If what's coming out of that is we're identifying where we didn't timely get minutes for, you know, however many meetings, and we're missing, it seems like we're missing the, you know, the forest, not just for the trees, but for, like, the individual leaves. So I wish the Inspector General's office had stayed here so that we could have this conversation.
And I'll follow up with that, and I'll talk with the Inspector General about it. Sometimes they're under restrictions on what they can get into. Of course, if you're going to get into best practices, you know,
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that was the point in the question I asked her, was if the answer was we're just identifying technical violations, that's fine. That's just that's a completely different charge than I'm going to go through, audit the city, and decide where the best practices have come short. It's just you've come up with a volunteer commission that, on its own time, with no money, has come up with what seemed to be substantially more in both qualitatively and quantitatively than our paid Inspector General's office.
And I could be wrong in my interpretation of Ms. Green's comments, but my impression was that her charge was to find any violations of that particular regulation, and that when she finds those violations, she expressed that she would include best practices in her recommendations. So I don't know if there's overlap with your concern or not, but it's certainly worth exploring and potentially even adding a different form of audit for the IG's office. Yeah. And it doesn't overlap.
And that's sort of this came up by almost serendipity, right, that the council president stood up this task force and did this. Otherwise, nobody ever would have come up with these conclusions.
Being a former auditor, I think the scope of what the task force was much broader than what they were doing. It was an audit. Here was the procedure that they were auditing, and I think that's what you have to really look at. So I think, Brian, I think you're absolutely right. They were responding to this very narrow audit, and if they could make a recommendation for best practices, they would. But I think this task force is really great that should be shared with the Office of Inspector General.
I agree.
I'd like to add to Joe's suggestion that when Carla talks with Lisa, my impression when I heard what Joe has said is we have a brand new Inspector General, we have a brand new member of her staff, and it could be that all they could do this year was just count apples and oranges. They couldn't really get into the kind of deeper thinking that Joe is suggesting and that may very well have been called for. So I agree. I think it makes sense to give them the open government report and suggest to them that maybe this next year they could dive a little deeper. But it is kind of tough. I mean, she just came into her job. The lady she asked to do it was just asked to do it. If, you know, without some direction about going deeper, I'm not sure how much more they could have done, not knowing more than I do about it. But, I think you're right. It would make sense that having these recommendations is good, and being able to address the bigger open government would be very helpful.
Well, and the mission of the IG's office is inclusive of broader subjects and investigations. So to the extent that, Mr. Ryback, you're correct, that this is a very narrow audit and that it was focused on specific violations of specific provisions. I mean, she may very well have something, a broader net cast already on these issues, but it's a conversation worth having regardless. So I think we're all in agreement on that.
Yeah. And I don't want to be misinterpreted as suggesting that the office did anything wrong. I just, my interpretation of what she said is that it was broader. But it would make sense to me that both what you and Mr. Ryback said would be right. I mean, it would make sense that the audit would be narrower. And if that's true, then I think we in the Inspector General's office need to figure out where's the missing gap. Because we have an open government committee. We have a fully funded Inspector General's office. But yet, somewhere, we missed all of this stuff, right? There was nobody who was looking at all of these recommendations until Council President Brochet stood up this task force. And it just seems to me that one of us should have found all this, should have been able to do this.
I'll contact the Inspector General, and I think she'd probably want to come back and maybe be on the agenda for October and just address that, because they have certain guidelines, and they can't get into policy issues like determining policy. And so they're very specific about what they can get into and what they can't get into. And so it'd be interesting to see how she responds to those questions, where the lines are.
We have an annual report for last year.
We've sent that out to everybody. It speaks for itself.
I agree. We have an update on Office of Ethics, Compliance, and Oversight budget. What is
that?
Yep,
this is just good news in a sentence, which is our budget was increased. And yes, and we went from $325,393 to $370,800, an increase of $62,000. And what that accounts for is the new position with Andrea helping part-time with training, which has been wonderful. The position for our administrative assistant, Lourdes' position, was already in the budget for this year. So the administration was supportive of the office and gave us an extra position. We have one technical detail, which is under my contract, every year you have to approve of my salary for the year. It's basically the same as last year within the budget allocated by City Council. It's reflective of the contract. The contract says, and we have a prepared motion for this. It basically, in my contract, which I can't find, it just says that every year you have to approve and review my salary. So you can either keep it the same, you can increase, you can decrease, you can do whatever you want. I'm not asking for any increase.
Sure. Can I talk about that for a second?
Yes.
So this is something I've been trying to, and time-wise, this just never comes up because we always have this discussion now and sort of not when we need to be able to try to get movement on this. But my concern, at least since I've joined the commission, has been that Carla does this because she's really passionate about ethics and that she loves the city. And that's great. And it's a very positive thing for the city. But I think as a commission and as the city council, we need to be thinking about who's going to be the next Carla. And are we going to be able to attract them to the position, to be putting in the kind of work, both quality and quantity that Carla does, on what we pay Carla. And so I'm deeply appreciative that Carla does it at the amount she does and is a part-time position. But that's really not the position. I mean, the director or the executive director of the Office of Ethics, Compliance, and Oversight has to be a full-time, competitively paid position. It just has to be. Someday, maybe it's 50 years from now, Carla will no longer be here with us. And we've got to be thinking. I don't necessarily think there's anything we need to do about this today, but we've got to figure out when the time is for us to be able to step in and ask the council to rethink that position so that it's increased both budget-wise and up to a full-time position, so that whoever the next executive director is, we can attract a quality candidate who can actually put in full-time employment. It makes no sense to have this as a part-time job. We do not want an executive director of ethics working another job. Right, we can't have that.
Well, it's not a part-time job, I can tell you. But there are strategies for how we phase this in, and so it's a longer discussion, and maybe we just think with that a little bit. Have a separate meeting on that and come up with different ideas, because certainly what the City Council Auditor's Office does is they have a progression within the office and the inspector general's office. They always have a deputy. They have people that they're training for years to take over that position. So when you have 300, 400,000, you can kind of play around with moving money and, you know, there's ways to do it. But you're right. I mean, it definitely has to be thought of. It can't be like a one-month thing right. to think of. And every year we've been increasing the ethics budget. You know, so.
But I don't want to lose a part. I don't want to lose our training coordinator, right? To be able to, you know, move that money over to the executive director. So, you tell us when the time is. But I mean, I think that as a commission, we should take a position on this wherever, whenever the time is, so that when council or the mayor is proposing the next budget, they can start to think about this and try to find the allocation. Because I think everybody. I don't think there's going to be any question among anybody at council or the mayor's office that we shouldn't do something about this. Otherwise, we're just going to be in kind of a weird position when the 50 years from now comes.
Well, come sooner than 50 years, and I have my sights on some options that we have, but longer discussion. But if we could at least get the next year handled, that I'll be here for another year. So if we could.
Well, a couple issues on that, too. Are all the dollars for your budget already accounted for? Have you accounted? So you've essentially accounted for your same salary without any. There's no remaining funds, so that discussion really is out of our hands at this point. True.
The $75,000 that's always been allocated for my position has been the same for 11 years, and it's what's approved as. Of this date with City Council, the final vote on it is next Tuesday.
Okay, and that answers my second question, which there is some immediacy to the requirement that we enter an approval of the contract. Is the contract something so simple as to what you're?
No, the contract's already been approved for 3 years.
It's already approved.
So what do you need from us? I'm confused.
It's just that you're supposed to review the rate of pay every year. Within the budget that the City Council gives, which is always $75,000, to review the rate. Last year you reviewed it, and there was an increase.
We increased the rate, but kept the dollar amount the same.
Yeah, the dollar amount.
It didn't really good. We said, oh, you're not getting paid enough, so we increased her rate. But the dollar amount stayed the same, so it just meant that she could only get paid for lesser hours, but at a higher rate.
So is the answer, can I follow?
Please.
I'm just a little confused. The answer to Chairman Hull's question is the answer that yes, there's nothing we can do about this? It's set. It doesn't matter if we try to raise it. It's not going to get raised because there's no more dollars.
There's no more dollars, but let's say you raised my salary $5 an hour. There would just be less hours that I would account to the city for. I'd probably still work those hours, but if there's less that I would have to account for with the city. You could raise my salary from 93 to 95. You have the option to do that. I'm not asking for that. I'm just asking for the same as last year.
But
you could
can't
also
increase
lower.
The $75,000.
No, you can't.
Okay, that's
you
what
can.
I was trying to figure out.
Paula, do you want to wait until the city council approves this before we vote on it? Since they won't approve it until the end of this month, or have they already approved it?
They're approving it Tuesday, and this could be done pending the approval Tuesday. No mm-hmm. changes have gone in. It's the final one that's going in on Tuesday. So you could just approve it now and be done with it. Or, you know, we could discuss it next
Tuesday. Oh, wait till City Council approves it then?
This
okay.
is pending the approval for next Tuesday. The motion just is pending the approval next Tuesday, and I just can't imagine that there would be any change at this late date in the budget. There's no questions on the budget the entire month.
Mm-hmm. I've worked hard on writing this, so maybe I could read it to the group.
Can I ask one, maybe two clarifying questions? If we had had this conversation in the March meeting, could we have done something to
influence
more than $75,000 so we could change the rate and also impact the amount of money that
we could, and we could start doing that now, and that's one of the strategies that I think would be good
to say that basically for the month of August and September, I didn't have any hours left, so I just worked for free. You know, now that is, if I calculated my hours, I could say, look, you know, part-time is my, you need to allocate more money for this. I'm happy with the hourly rate, but I need more money in the budget. And that way, if we can get the budget higher, we're getting more dollars in for eventually for another person to come mm-hmm. in. So I will start lobbying. But what we were lobbying for was an increase in salary. next year, I think this will be a good thing to face.
When do we need to have this conversation so that we can influence next year's budget?
Probably January.
Okay.
I have one more clarifying question. Is there any strategic advantage to making a recommendation that we increase your hourly rate, even though we understand that it won't increase the amount of money that you'll be able to earn? It'll just decrease the number of hours you report, looking forward to the next person who might take the position. If we inch it up, it doesn't help now.
Dollars. Budget higher, the hourly rates.
Two topics. In regard to whether we make a decision today or put it off until after City Council, would it be of any help to be able to say to City Council that it's come through here and that we're approving it and we're asking for it? It's not just a general budget request. In other words, it's come to us and it's a fresh request. We've done it ahead of time.
They've got $1 billion. They're deciding what we do with this particular thing is probably inconsequential to them. And especially in light of the fact that there's already an executed contract for 3 years at the 75 rate and at the hour. Already what we're doing is reaffirming the contract from last year.
This is year two of your agreement or year three?
It's year two going into year two.
Going into year two.
And so we're just saying what we did a contract for and got a for last year, we just start spending the same rate because we already have a contract for the amount and the rate. We're just keeping the hourly fee the same.
Will there ever be even be a presentation on Tuesday as far as we're concerned?
No.
Okay,
we already had our budget hearing in August.
Okay.
We weren't asked any questions and they approved of it.
The second part of my question is, are you keeping track of the hours that you are spending? Not just those you're being compensated for. I'd really appreciate it if you'd keep doing that because I think that's a significant set of data for us, not only here, but as we move toward the position that Joe is talking about, which I fully agree with.
I just had one quick thing to add about the budget discussion. When we went to our budget hearing in August, several members on the Finance Committee of Council were incredibly complimentary and laudatory of Carla and the work that she has done in the office. It was the shortest budget hearing I've ever been to, and it was the most complimentary, and it isn't a testament to her strong work.
Thank you, Carla.
So may I make a recommendation here? Pursuant to paragraph 1.2 of Carla Miller's agreement of December 2017, I move that we approve the executive director's compensation for fiscal year 2018 and 19 at the same rate as the previous fiscal year, which is in parens $93 per hour, close parens, and within the same $75,000 allocation for this salary if the current ethics budget is approved by City Council on September 25th, 2018.
Have a second?
I will happily. You beat me.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. We do need to schedule our remaining events, but we are getting perilously close to our cutoff. Do we want to do that through any other kind of correspondence or?
Have the one in October already set,
or we could just do it then since we have one set.
We could.
Yeah.
Quorum cutoff, were you thinking of me? I can stay until 6:43. I have another meeting at 7, so.
And what day does the next meeting?
What day is November 22nd?
Yeah, there it is.
If you want, we can bring some options and more of us can send out some emails. Whether you want to have some of the subcommittees, like the nominating is going to have to meet, maybe the Ioana's open government would meet, maybe the subcommittees meet in November, and then we have our typical holiday get together in December. So maybe it's easy to schedule that in October, and the board can send out some emails.
have any public comment?
Carol, Lee's coming up. On the scheduling, could the three of us are nominating, could we just set a date for that? Just to make the job easier?
Sure.
Is that okay with you?
Probably do that after public comment. I don't.
Yes, I was just trying to follow the agenda. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, no, that'd be fine. I think that's a good idea. Yes, sir.
A young girl in eastern Czechoslovakia when the fascist movements began their moves, when Hitler began his rise, which I didn't realize was probably almost 15 years after Mussolini had already been put into the Il Duce total power in Italy. But the main thing is her point in this book is, having been in Czechoslovakia when the Nazis rose to their west, and that was when Hitler declared that half of Czechoslovakia, which is a Sudetenland, should be German, should come under the German umbrella, the Reich umbrella, because after all, everybody in western Czechoslovakia spoke German. And they were not going to disagree with what everybody was watching going on, that was going on in Germany as they steadily rose. And from the south, Mussolini came up from the south, and then of course before it was over, the Bolsheviks came in from the north. But she and her family barely made it out and ended up by a miracle, the way it's described, in England when the war was declared. But she has very, very strong feelings about the insidiousness of the creeping fascism. It's so, I've been aware of a lot of things you go on in departments of the city government. It really, really bothered me having been
1 minute.
Before. I'm just sort of victimized by a lot of it. But at any rate, I just wanted to bring this up. I would suggest this. It's a brand new book. I would suggest it to anybody for reading. But I wanted to speak to the Transparency and Open Government Subcommittee that Anna Brochet convened back in, I guess, March or whatever it was. It was very late on when she got fed up with during this consolidation review that we're going through right now, they're adulating on our strong mayor concept of government. I believe it probably could be better called Machiavellian in some aspects, and depending on some
10 seconds.
But she was on to a very, very good thing. It needed to be done for a very long time, and nobody had the courage to do it. And it's too bad that she got the whole thing. What you're seeing is about halfway into what really needs to be opened up and dug into. John Nooney and I were all the meetings virtually, and are in the record in some places. We didn't get to add very much because we were not on the task force.
3 minutes.
Thank you, sir. Any other public comment? I was remiss in two areas of new business. I agree we should set appointment committee. That would be a good idea. And then while they're doing that, I also neglected to discuss financial disclosure status.
But I covered that in my report by mistake, that we have 100% compliance.
Okay. And I heard you to say 100% compliance with officials.
Right.
Which is great, but I didn't know if you were addressing us as well. So.
Yeah. Great. I'm talking 100%.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Across all reporters?
Yep.
Wow.
Perfect. There is a slight exception that for those who have been suspended from office because of federal criminal charges, we're not included in that statistic. Not filing financial disclosure.
Do I recall the State Ethics Commission saying that that is still required?
Yes. So 100% of all people that are have complied that are not under federal indictment.
Accepted.
Can I ask a question related to the nominating committee?
Yes.
When we're considering applicants, do we already have a tool that we use? Question, so that's already done. So do you think that it's best if we plan to meet right after the applications are due in?
What we've done in the past is meet a little bit earlier and then go over the questions and then bring the people in to interview them. It's not complicated.
The schedule here would have the applications due, and we could meet even that evening.
That may be difficult to the applicants who have just recently submitted. They may not be ready or prepared to come. That's just been a consideration in the past.
In my vision, I thought that I maybe misunderstood the process, so I thought that we would get the applicants and they'd all be in on the evening of the 15th, and then like on the 16th we could meet and go through the applicants, and I thought we were choosing who we wanted to call in for interviews.
It's typically very structured. Everybody who applies can interview. They're asked the exact same questions, provided the same opportunity to answer, and at the close of them, we discuss and make a motion and vote.
Okay. Thank
you. So, anytime that week? We've typically met like right after work hours, right?
Yeah, I think we typically have set it around 4 p.m.
And we had aside like 3 or 4 hours, right, in case.
Yeah. We I think the most we've ever had apply is somewhere between 10 to 12 people. And if we have more apply, we just sometimes truncate. We'll set the block of time, but we'll truncate the interview time. And the nominating committee could use a chair.
Like to elect a chair amongst themselves. Do we have any volunteers?
I propose Ms. Schmidt.
I would happily serve, even though I don't have a clue. I'll learn tomorrow. Carla, give me a lesson. Sure. I'd be happy to serve. What do you think?
I think we have a chair.
Okay. Wow. Outstanding.
The 16th, 18th, 19th, all work for me.
I can make the 19th work. The 18th is the only day that week that's tenable for me.
Who was it that you could do 16th? What about the, I know it's a little less ideal, but what about the 15th? And we can move the application deadline up even if we have to.
That would be fine with me if we put the deadline.
Or even Friday before. Actually, so are we going to set it at 2, or do you want to set it at 4?
We typically set it at 4 or 4:30 in case those that apply have work hour commitments that they have to meet.
People who need to come early can ask for earlier times.
Right.
Need to come at.
Mm-hmm.
Rather go up a little bit, put it at 3.
Earlier when we started, I'm happy with it, but I'll be here.
Okay. At 3, would we start the applicants like at 3:30 so we have a few minutes together to run through the process, or we won't need 3:30 minutes, we need 10 minutes.
I don't remember.
I think it took about 10 or 15 minutes.
Want to start at 3 and have the interviews start at 3:15?
And we'll send out the questions that we've used in the past so you can take a look at them. And
Send things in writing. You can read over in 5 minutes. And you
can go. So are we going to make the applications due on 12?
I suggest that.
5 p.m. or something?
Probably maybe at noon on the 12th. That's a Friday. Mm-hmm. We need time to get them to you. If they do them 5 p.m. on Friday, I can't guarantee.
As an option, I assume since we're running a little later than we thought that we're not going to go into a shade meeting. Yeah.
We don't have time for that.
Right. So since we're not going to do that, I just want to say one thing before we adjourn. That is, I just wanted to commend the complaints subcommittee, Joe and Ellen. They have processed more complaints in the last year than we have with, I think, the entire Ethics Commission history. Together with really excellent opinions. I commend you for that work and Joe for chairing that. And also Mary Bland Love, the hours and hours and hours that the legislative committee has hashed over things, and of course Joe's on that committee too. Amazing detailed work. And even though she said something like, well, you know, we don't have anything to bring to you, I'm thinking in our history, how many years we spent going over some of these things and how long it takes to get consensus on it, and you suffer when you go through that. So if there isn't adequate suffering, you haven't really gotten the feel for it.
Well, I thank you for that, and I'll just say we may be closer than we think, so just be hopeful.
I will, as an observer, vouch for the adequate suffering.
Yeah,
having
so
attended several of the meetings.
Thank you all very much for your hard work.
So we don't go again until January.
Thank you, Brian.
But I was telling Joe on the way in, I do more work. There it's.